Sandy, you better come. George standing in the doorway looking scared and out of breath. I think maybe one of these idiots may have locked some other idiot in the trunk of that fucking nuisance in Shed B. You like for a joke? Sandy stared at him, thunderstruck, unable or perhaps unwilling to believe that anyone, even that dope Santerre, could do such a thing. Except people could. He knew it. He knew something else as well. Incredible as it might seem, in many cases they meant no harm. George mistook the acting SC's surprise for disbelief. I might be wrong, but honest to God, I'm not pulling your chain. Something's thumping the lid of the trunk. From the inside. Sounds like with his fist. I started to go in on my own, then change my mind. That was the right call, Sandy said. Come on. They hurried out, stopping just long enough so Sandy could look in the kitchen and then bawl upstairs to the common room. No one. The barracks was never deserted, but it was deserted now. And why? Because there was never a cop around when you needed one. That was why. Herb Avery was running dispatch that night. At least that was one. And he joined them. You want me to call someone in off the road? Sandy, I can if you want. No. Sandy was looking around, trying to remember where he'd last seen the coil of rope. In the hutch, probably. Unless some yo-yo had taken it home to haul something upstairs with, which would be just about par for the course. Come on, George. The two of them crossed the parking lot in the red sunset light, their trailing shadows all but infinite, going first to the roll-up door for a little look-see. The Buick sat there, as it had ever since old Johnny Parker dragged it in behind his tow truck. Johnny, now retired and getting through his nights with an oxygen tank beside his bed, but still smoking. It cast its own shadow on the concrete floor. Sandy started to turn away, meaning to check the hutch for the rope, and just as he did, there came another thump. It was strong and flat and unemphatic. The trunk lid shivered, dimpled up in the middle for a moment, then went back down. It looked to Sandy as if the roadmaster actually rocked a little bit on its springs. There, you see? George said. He started to add something else, and that was when the Buick's trunk came unlatched and the lid sprang up on its hinges and the fish fell out. Of course, it was a fish no more than the bat thing was a bat, but they both knew at once it was nothing made to live on land. It had not one gill on the side they could see, but four of them in a line, parallel slashes in its skin, which was the color of dark, tarnished silver. It had a ragged and membranous tail. It unfolded out of the trunk with a last, convulsive, dying shiver. Its bottom half curved and flexed, and Sandy could see how it might have made that thumping sound. Yes, that was clear enough, but how a thing of such size could ever have fit into the closed trunk of the Buick in the first place was beyond both of them. What hit the concrete floor of Shed B with a flat, wet slap was the size of a sofa. George and Sandy clutched each other like children and screamed. For a moment they were children, with every adult thought driven out of their heads. Somewhere inside the barracks, Mr. Dillon began to bark. It lay there on the floor, no more fish than a wolf is a house pet, although it may look quite a bit like a dog. And in any case, this fish was only a fish up to the purple slashes of its gills. Where a fish's head would have been, something that at least had the steadying sanity of eyes and a mouth, there was a knotted, naked mass of pink things, too thin and stiff to be tentacles, too thick to be hair. Each was tipped with a black node, and Sandy's first coherent thought was, a shrimp. The top half of it some kind of shrimp, and those black things are its eyes.